Welcome to the London Walks podcast, presented by Andy Hallett and Adam Scott Goulding.
Okay, so here we are. This is our next podcast. This is Sherlock Holmes we're going to do, aren't we? I'm looking forward to Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes, the game's afoot. one of the most famous fictional characters from the Pantheon.
Arthur Conan Doyle.
Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the composer, the writer.
Do you know, there was a recent survey in which 45% of people thought that Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes, was a real person. But apparently in the same survey, 45% of people thought that Winston Churchill was fictitious. Tells you something about the British public, doesn't it?
Well, very good. It tells you something about the desire to buy into legend as well, I suppose.
Yes.
But, you know, what's the value of life without a little bit of romance? and the idea of Sherlock Holmes being a real character is one that is tantalising and amusing as well, and good fun on the Sherlock Holmes walk.
Yeah.
When I'm leading that walk, I would begin by asking the group of people, so, is he real or fictional? And depending on the answers that we get, you know, we'll take it from there.
And what a bunch of people around that time. So Robert Louis Stevenson, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, I now know I should pronounce it.
Indeed.
And Oscar Wilde as well, Picture Dorian Gray, all that kind of period, wasn't it? All contemporary.
Yes, well, we're getting into the big hitters of 19th century literature here, which is part of the analysis of Sherlock Holmes, is that was Conan Doyle a big hitter in a literary sense? Can we put him in the company of Stevenson and Oscar Wilde? And that sort of dogged him for, well, more than a century now.
Well, he was nervous about it because he killed him off, didn't he?
Quite so. I think if he'd been around today, I think a good comparison with Conan Doyle today would be Ian Rankin, his countryman, his compatriot. Rankin is the creator of Inspector Rebus.
Right.
He lives in Edinburgh. Conan Doyle was born in Edinburgh, studied at Edinburgh University. The idea being, if Conan Doyle had been around and had been a contemporary of Ian Rankin, we'd be taking him a lot more seriously. I mean, Ian Rankin's never out of the broadsheet papers, giving his opinions on the affairs of the day. He's on Arts Review shows. Right. He's a crime writer, but he's taken seriously as a writer and as an intellect, whereas Conan Doyle may not have been taken as seriously in his day, which is a shame. It's pretty.
Well, what did he want to pack it in for? What was he wanted to do?
I think a life of literary fiction, a life of historical fiction.
Okay. So he kills him off, and then he comes back in 1903 with the Hand of the Baskervilles. Well, that's pre the death of Sherlock Holmes, isn't it? But the first one, am I right about this? The Empty House. He explains how he survived the falls.
Yes, he's gone round the world and he's studied with...
Yeah, he's been to Tibet.
Yes, he's studied with Tibetan gurus and so forth. comes back posing, if I remember correctly, as an elderly bookseller.
Right, okay.
And even his closest friend in the world, Dr. Watson, doesn't recognise him.
Okay. So, on that particular walk, we don't start at 221... We don't start in Baker Street, do we?
We start at the embankment and go around Sherlock Holmes's West End. Sherlock Holmes would make a great London Walks guide because he knew our city like the back of his hand. His knowledge of London is second only to London Walks guides.
Absolutely. Okay. So what are we going to talk about? I think that Richard is our kind of resident expert.
He demands, as they say. He is an enormous...
He demands to be interviewed.
He does, absolutely, yes. He won't take no for an answer. great expert on Sherlock Holmes, leads our Sherlock Holmes walks.
Yeah.
Very knowledgeable fellow. He said a wonderful thing. I asked him what he thought of the new Sherlock on the BBC with Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman. His theory was, as long as you've got a good and interesting relationship between the two actors, it doesn't really matter who the actors are. As long as that central relationship is in place, then Holmes and Watson will succeed.
I think it's great.
I'm with you on that as well. I think it's a vivid adaptation of the books.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant.
I'm lying low here on near Chancery Lane, waiting for the aforementioned Richard Burnop, to finish his Dickens walk. It's a Friday afternoon, and we're looking forward to a chat with him about Sherlock Holmes.
And there he is, finishing now with his well-deserved round of applause.
This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petri Wine brings you... Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Okay, I've just met Richard Burnett, my London Walks colleague, at the end of his Charles Dickens walk on a Friday afternoon. We're at Holborn. Hello, Richard.
Hello.
And we're here to discuss Sherlock, specifically Sherlock, the modern BBC adaptation of the Conan Doyle characters, starring Benedict Cumberbatch as the great detective.
That's right, yeah.
Not everybody's cup of tea, this new adaptation. Did you follow it? Did you watch it all?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yeah. And to be honest, guiding the Sherlock Holmes walks, it would be very unwise not to watch it. But actually, it's been a pleasure to watch from the start, really. The BBC put out the first series in that slightly embarrassing slot in the summer when they tend to put out drama that's... They think, oh, well, they've made it and we have to show it sometime. And suddenly, everyone's talking about it, everyone's catching up with it on iPlayer, and it became a phenomenon which you kind of don't associate with Sherlock Holmes, really. Unless, of course, you're talking about when the stories originally became successful in the 1890s, when it became this huge cult phenomenon as well. So it's sort of history repeating itself in a way.
And it's the first big, high-profile television adaptation in a generation. The last time round was a more traditional outing with Jeremy Brett in the 80s. Much more period, much more deerstalker and pipe oriented.
Yes, yeah.
And this one is updated right across the board, it would seem.
It has, yeah. Yeah, and it makes perfect sense as well, because with the Brett series, they went all out to do what Conan Doyle wrote, particularly the first few seasons of that. They really stuck very closely to the original stories. They went back to the original illustrations. So he wears top hats and things in London, and he only wears the famous other hat, the ear-flapped travelling cap, as Conan Doyle describes it. He only wears that in the countryside, as a middle-class Victorian gentleman would. And the detail in that and the fidelity of that, you know, if you want to see what Conan Doyle wrote, but you don't want to read the stories, watch Jeremy Brett is kind of the thing. So I think anything that tried to do Holmes in period would sort of suffer by comparison, really. And a few years ago now, there was what was intended as a TV pilot, which was called Sherlock, and they only did one, and it had James Darcy as Sherlock Holmes, and it's the only time an actor in his late 20s has played Holmes in his first adventure, when he meets Watson and so on. And it was all set in period and very, very modern in style. And the only thing it didn't have was the leap to putting it actually in the modern world. And that's something, I think it was re-released as Sherlock Case of Evil. And you watch it and you think, oh, it's really, really good. And they've got all the same sort of ideas that a lot of modern adaptations have got. They just haven't set it in the modern world. And that's what the Sherlock series did. Not on the back of that in any way. It's their own invention, but it just makes perfect sense. Don't try and do it as a period thing. Holmes has been updated before. And to be honest, up until 1938, he was always modern. All the early film adaptations were set in whatever year they were made, until 20th Century Fox brought Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce together for the first time in The Hound of the Baskervilles, and that was the first time, filming in 38, released in 39, that they made Holmes a period piece and said, let's go back to the 1890s. Nobody had done that before, so, you know, it makes sense that the wheel goes round and you make Holmes a modern character again.
Can we backtrack just a little bit there to perhaps an alternative leafy literary glade, as Sir Walter Scott may have had it? That hat you alluded to,
yes.
The other hat. Can we clear this business up? The deerstalker hat.
Yes.
There seems to be a running joke in Sherlock where Mr. Cumberbatch, as Sherlock, seems to wish to distance himself from this item of headgear.
Yes, and it works brilliantly, doesn't it? And I think, one of the things that Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss have done as the co-creators and the lead writers on Sherlock is that they've said many times in interviews that pretty much anything that's gone before with Sherlock Holmes they regard as canonical. In other words, it can be a line from a film here, it can be an idea from something else there, it can be anything. I don't mean that's that they're pinching stuff. I don't mean that. I mean there's such a wealth of previous versions and previous things that almost anything can kind of be referenced. But the hat, the hat goes back to the original stories, because Doyle talks about this ear-flapped travelling cap. I think that's the expression he uses. And when the first short stories were done for the Strand magazine in the 1890s, Sidney Paget was the illustrator, and Sidney Paget owned a deerstalker. And so where appropriate, Holmes wears a deerstalker. And I think the first appearance in the Strand magazine is in the Boscombe Valley Mystery, which is out in the countryside, it's out of London. It's the first of the stories that really goes out of London, of the short stories, number four. And in that, there's a wonderful illustration of Holmes lying full length, sort of investigating the case, captioned, "For a long time he remained there," with the deerstalker hat. And Paget drew it when appropriate, really, in the early stories. And his daughter certainly remembered that being an item of headgear that was familiar around the family home. That's the origins of it. A sort of diffidence towards the hat goes back as far as 1942 in the first of the updated Basil Rathbone series. Because the franchise had been picked up as a series of B pictures by Universal Film Studios and updated to World War II. So he's battling, well, sometimes Professor Moriarty, who's now working for the Nazis, or whoever, that sort of thing. But in the first of those updated ones, the voice of terror, they're about to leave Baker Street to go off on the case, and Holmes reaches for the deerstalker, which is on the hat stand, and Watson goes, "Oh, Holmes, you promised," and Holmes says, "Oh," and puts it back and puts some sort of soft felt hat on instead, I think. So that kind of sort of odd relationship with it. And that goes through to Billy Wilder's wonderful film, The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes, which certainly seems to be a favourite with the Sherlock team, where Robert Stevens, wonderful performance as Holmes, he complains that Watson says, has described him as being much taller than he actually is. And he also says, "You saddle me with this improbable costume, which the public now expects me to wear." And again, that's in that case is the deerstalker and the Inverness cape, the full iconic image, really. So picking it up in Sherlock makes perfect sense. Yes, that he now when the Red Tops print stuff about Sherlock in the context of the series, within the series itself, it's always, hat detective solves this or other. And is clearly a source of sort of embarrassment to the character, which I think is a wonderful way of doing it, because it is the iconic image.
Rathbone appears to the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, and Mr. Bruce to the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series.
In part two of the Sherlock Holmes London Walks podcast, we'll be putting Richard on the spot, asking him to nominate the greatest screen Sherlock Holmes of all time. In the meantime, you can join the Sherlock Holmes Walk every Friday afternoon from Embankment Station, meeting at 2 p.m.
The London Walks podcast was compiled, produced and presented by Andy Hallett and Adam Scott Goulding. For details of the full programme of London Walks, London's best guided walking tours, go to www.walks.com. The London Walks podcast was an APB production.